Alright, Shabbos Sai, good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Kuf Mem Gimel, 143. We are picking up Kuf Mem Beis, 142. And we are picking up 2, 4, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom on 142b. So remember, again, we're in the midst of a very important discussion. We're in the midst of a very important discussion about the following case. A little bit of an interesting case of a man who says to his wife, any children that I will have from you, any sons that I will have from you, or the sons that I will have from you, will inherit my property. Will get my property. So remember, at that point in time when the man made the declaration, the wife whom he was speaking to was not pregnant. So remember, again, we led into this discussion from the more general conversation about the ability to be maknet to an uber. Do you have the ability to go ahead and convey property to a child in utero? So we saw that machlokes. Again, we'll resolve that machlokes in Yeretz Hashem tomorrow. Now we're taking it one step further, which is the child's not even in utero. Can you go and be maknet property to a child who is not yet even conceived? Then what happens? After he made this declaration, the son that he did have from another wife says, hey dad, what about me? And the father says, okay, you're right, you should acquire together along with the sons of this woman. Again, the sons of this woman, meaning she's not even pregnant yet. So the shaila is, what is the status ultimately again of such a statement? So we'll say, so we saw machlokes, we saw the Gemara says, let's begin. Rabbi Avov, Rabbi Chanina, Bar Papi, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, Da'amri Les Cholik L'tayi B'makom Banyo. So we'll say, so remember again, we have two different groups of rabbis. We have Rav Avin, Rav Mesha, Rav Yirmiyo, who holds that the son, we'll call him, that's the living son, ultimately divides up the property with the children who will be born. And ultimately, again, Rabbi Avov, Rabbi Chanina, Bar Papi, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, say he does not. Amri Rabbi Avov, Rabbi Yirmiyo, Hilchasa Kavasana, Hilchasa Kavasaychu. He said, does the halacha follow us? Or does the halacha follow you? Amrle, Shita de Hilchasa Kavasan, so he said, it's partial that the halacha follows us. Dikashishna minaychu, for we are older than you. Velav Hilchasa Kavasaychu, the Dardiki Asun, and the halacha does not follow you, for you are younger. All right, so an interesting argument over here about the idea that perhaps the halacha follows the individuals who are older and not the individuals who are younger. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. Amrleis, he said to him, "Midi b'keshishus atalya milsa, b'taim atalya milsa." I don't understand. What does this have to do with age? This has to do ultimately again with svara. Who has the stronger svara? Who has the stronger logic? That should be the one ultimately again who wins the particular argument. The time am I? So what is the logic here? Zila gabit Rabbi Abin, das sabrenidus. He said, go to Rabbi Abin because I explained the logic of my position to him. The top of Kuf Mem Gimel, the karkish ba reshe, be midrasha. And ultimately again, when I conveyed to him my svara, he nodded his head in agreement in the base medrash. So Azal, legabe, so he went to him. Amrle, so he said to him, what's the logic? Ilu amrle kane kechamar mikani. We'll say, if I were to say to Ruvain, go ahead and acquire my property like a donkey, right? Ultimately, again, would the individual acquire the property? And of course, the answer is no. Right? In other words, on both sides, take a look at the Rashi for just a moment. Kaneka chamar mikana, kimo shach chamar lo kana, kain hu lo kana, hacha nami kihechi debanim haasidim lavo lo kanu, ihu nami lo kana. So both sides, so comes along Rabbi Abin. Rabbi Abin says the following. Rabbi Abin says that halacha lemaisa, if I were to go ahead and say to Ruvain, go and acquire my property like a donkey. So we'll say, so that statement, what's the impact of that statement? So obviously Reuven would not acquire. Why not? Because the same way that the donkey doesn't have the ability to acquire, so to what? So to Reuven doesn't have the ability to acquire as well. Then I will say, now what's the logic there? So therefore again, applying that to our case, when the father tells the already existing son, go and acquire with the sons of this woman, we'll say the sons of this woman do not yet exist. Because they do not yet exist, they do not acquire. And therefore what? Because they don't acquire, so the living son doesn't acquire his own. In other words, what Rabbi Avin is saying is the following. When you equate the acquisitory ability of someone to someone or something who does not have the ability to acquire, that thereby takes away from the first individual's ability to acquire as well. If you tell me to acquire like a donkey can't acquire, therefore I can't acquire as well. You tell me to acquire alongside children who do not yet exist, do not mean they're not even conceived, therefore again that tells you that I don't have the ability to acquire as well. Fine, so says the Gemara. So we'll say, so that seems to bring that particular conversation to a close, right? That at the end of the day, because the father is equating the existing son's ability to acquire alongside the not yet existing son's, therefore again, the existing son does not acquire anything additional with the not yet existing children. So says the Gemara. How about the following? At the chamar. Also, what about if a man, if I say to someone, you and the donkey should acquire? Rashi says, Ata ubehemazu tiknu nechas. I say to Reuven, Reuven, you and the donkey should acquire my possessions. What is the impact of that statement? Rav Nachman says that Rabbi said Reuven acquires. In other words, I'm saying to Reuven, Reuven, you and the donkey acquire my possessions. So Rav Nachman says Reuven acquires 50% of my estate. Look at the Rashbam. Kana mechza. Tahachi amar le ata v'chamer tiknu shneichem. Ata mechza. V'hu mechza. V'lo avada ishchel ko b'shul ha'chamer shlo tilan zebazes. We'll say essentially what we say is, I'm saying to Reuven, Reuven, you acquire half of my estate, the donkey acquires half of my estate. I, the donkey, can't acquire half of the estate. That's okay. The donkey's inability to acquire half doesn't what? Doesn't impact Reuven's ability to acquire half. Therefore, Reuven still acquires half of the estate. Rav Hamnuna says, Lo amar klum. Rav Hamnuna says, such a statement is meaningless. Why? Take a look at the Rashbam, Lo karna v'lo klum, Dechevet debikinyan echad shitev shnehen, because since I put Reuven and the donkey in the same statement, Lo nigim rabadai klaknas lezeh below zeh, I went ahead and I interconnected their acquisitory abilities. And therefore, again, what I'm saying is, Reuven, if the donkey could acquire, you could acquire. Donkey, if you could acquire, Reuven, or say, if you really can acquire, you could acquire. So therefore, again, because I linked the two kinyanim, since the donkey can't acquire, then what? Reuven can't acquire as well. Therefore, again, the statement becomes absolutely meaningless. But Rav Sheshe says, Kada hakol. But the intro of Sheshe says that Reuven acquires everything. Look at the Rashbam. Rav Sheshe says, Kana hakol. Adam yodeh shein chamer kona. Because they all say, everyone knows that a donkey can't acquire. The gamar bedaito shemi sheyucha liknos mishneim yikne. And therefore, again, the intention of the grantor, i.e. of me, is that whoever can acquire should acquire the whole thing. So I'll say, so three way machlokes. Remember, what's the case? I'm saying to Reuven, Reuven, you and the donkey should acquire my estate. Should acquire my estate. This is a gift. So what's the halacha? So again, Rav Nachman says, Reuven gets 50%. We view it as two separate gifts. The donkey's gift is invalid, obviously, but Reuven's gift stands. Rav Hamnuna says, Reuven acquires nothing because their gifts are intertwined. If donkey can't acquire, Reuven can't acquire. Rav Sheshe says, the donkey piece becomes irrelevant. Reuven acquires everything. So I'm Rav Sheshe's mina aminala. So Rav Sheshe says, from where do I know that ultimately, again, Reuven acquires everything, and we just view the donkey part as irrelevant. Disanya Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ein lechamar bikishus ela pnimi shebo. We'll say, listen to this. Cucumbers. So we're talking about over here, separating out trumas and maisers. So we'll say, so listen to this. So the halacha is over here, the farmer is separating out truma. Now, remember again, when it comes to truma, you could give truma. There is no biblically mandated amount with truma. So rather, you could give in the following proportions. The Gemara says, if somebody's generous, they give 1/40th of their crop. If somebody is what they call benoni, regular person, 1/50th of their crop. If someone is stingy, they give 1/60th of their crop. So we'll say, so listen to this. The assumption is every cucumber has a what we call a sweet part to it and has a bitter part to it. So the Gemara says, Lefichach, kishu toreim mosif alachitzon shebo v'toreim. We'll say, listen to this. Let's say I have 50 cucumbers. So I'm separating out one cucumber. So we'll say, so the amazing part over here as my truma. So the amazing part over here is it's understood that not all of that cucumber is sweet. In other words, part of every single cucumber is bitter. So what do I do? So the problem is that if I separate out one cucumber, I don't have a full cucumber that's sweet. Instead, I have part of a cucumber that's sweet, part of a cucumber that's bitter. So what do? Says the Gemara. In order to be able to separate out a part for truma, that's all good, that's kulo sweet, that's totally good. What do? I separate out one cucumber plus a little. What does that plus a little do? That plus a little ultimately makes up for the part of the one truma cucumber that is bitter, thereby allowing me to essentially separate one entire unit of edible cucumber as truma for the rest of the crop. So the Gemara says, Va'amai, but I don't understand, why does that work? Why does that work? Va'amai at v'chamerhu. We'll say, is that not the equivalent of the case of you and the donkey? So we'll say, what does it mean? Take a look at the Rashbam, Va'amai. At v'chamru, almost right across in the Rashbam, Sha'amar kishos zeh yehei truma al elu. So let's remember, the case over here is where I am separating out one cucumber as truma for the rest of the crop. V'chevun diyish b'mara masuk, in the same way that this one cucumber has a part that's bitter, has a part that's sweet. Ki hechi demar lo chayil ba truma, v'lo mevatlo shein tevel min amem tes, hachinami hamasuk lo yochol alav shein truma. Now what I'm saying over here is that what? Is that lamaisa, the shame truma does not devolve upon the bitter part. If the shame truma, the name of the truma, does not devolve upon the bitter part, then essentially what I have is, within one cucumber, a proper part and an improper part, or I should say, a kosher part and a non-kosher part. So is this not the same case, ultimately, again, as at v'chamer, when I try to give my property to you and the donkey? So we'll say, meaning any time, what the Gemara is saying over here, is that any time you try to have a status devolve upon something that has part of it that is suitable, part of it that's unsuitable. So the same way that the truma designation does not devolve upon the bitter part of the cucumber, it also shouldn't, what? Devolve upon the sweet part of the cucumber. Much in the same way that, at least according to one opinion, when you convey property to you and the donkey, the same way that it doesn't devolve upon the part of the donkey, it also shouldn't devolve upon the part of the other individual. To which the Gemara says, no, the truma case is different. Why? Shiny hasam de midaraisa truma al yasi. We'll say, midaraisa, the truma works. In other words, even if part of the cucumber is not good, is bitter, on a biblical level, the truma designation still devolves upon that. Where do we know this? From Tamar Rabbi Eloi, Minoyin, the term in Arala, Ala Yafa, Shet Shumas, or Truma. But say, how do we know that if someone separates out inferior produce, as truma for good produce, that it's those, in other words, Rabbi Eloi, that this is what's called Torim Min Hara Ala Yafa, which means you're separating out inferior produce as truma for superior produce. How do I know that that works? Shinemar, V'lo tisu alav chet, b'harimchem eschal bo mimenu. Because the pasuk says, you shall not go ahead and bear a sin. When you go ahead and you separate out chal bo mimenu, means the superior produce as truma. So what the Torah is telling me is that when I separate out truma, I should separate out superior produce. Now the Gemara says, and the Torah says, and if I do that, I will not be in I will not commit an avera. Vim eino kadosh. Now, the only way I would go ahead and violate an avera is how? Is if lemaisa, again, by separating out the inferior truma, it would in fact become truma. And therefore the Torah is telling me, if you do that, it's not good. Because they're both saying, if by separating out inferior produce, it wouldn't become truma, then what? There's no chet. There's no chet. Why? Because the act itself is simply a void act. In eno kadosh, nesius chet lama. Mikan, from here you see, the Torah min hara ala yafesh et shumas et shuma. So this is actually very interesting. What the Gemara suggests over here, Bosai, is the following. That halacha lemaisa, it is midrabanan that we say that you cannot separate out inferior produce as truma for superior produce. But midaraisa, ultimately, again, such an act works. That's why when you separate out, if I have 50 cucumbers, and I'm separating out one cucumber as truma for that batch, even though what? We all know that what's in that cucumber, Bosai? What's in there? There is something inferior in that cucumber. So Chazal tell me, I should separate out one cucumber plus. Now, plus means I should separate out another piece of cucumber that's good, corresponding to the part of the designated cucumber that's bitter. But Rabbi say that it's not comparable to a case of at v'chamer. Why? Because midaraisa, the designation of that cucumber, even of the bitter part, ultimately works as a truma designation, because midaraisa, even if you're tori mehara ala yofa, it works. Amdei Mordechai Ravashi. So Mordechai said to Ravashi, Massiv Rav Avdio Tiyufta. Rav Avdio brought up the following kasha. Masse b'chamish nashim u'bahen shtei achasot. So listen to this. There was an episode of a group of five women, and included in that group of five women were two sisters. V'liket echad kalkala shel te'enim v'shel ahen aizen. I'm about to say, now these five women together owned a fig tree. And what happens? A man came along, and he picked figs from the tree. V'shel ahen aizen, from these ladies' tree. So even though it was technically their tree, remember again, what happens to the produce during Shemitah? The produce is ownerless. So a man is coming along, picking off figs from a tree that belonged to a group of women during the Shemitah year. Okay? So remember, bottom line is, it's their tree, but now it's his fruit. So watch this. And he says to them, Hare kulchen mikudashos li bekalkalazos. And he betroths all five of them with the figs in this basket. Right? You will all become mikudashos to me with the figs in this basket. And what happens? The kibla achas mehen ayide kulam. They will say, one of the women of the group accepts the figs as kiddushin on behalf of all of them. So says the Gemara, now watch this. Amru chachamim. So we'll say, remember, the problem we have, now so far, everything in this case is totally fine. I mean, you know, everything in this case is totally fine. With one issue, which is that in this group are two sisters. That's the problem, that's the halachic problem we have in this case. So the Gemara says, Amru Chachamim, Ein Achayos Mikudoshos. The sisters are not Mikudoshos to this man. So the Gemara infers from this, Achayos Hudein Mikudoshos, so meaning it's the sisters who are not Mikudoshos in this case. Hanachios Mikudoshos. So it appears, based on the statement over here, that fine, the sisters are not Mikudoshos, because obviously I will say it doesn't work because the man is trying to be Mekadesh two sisters. So that is not going to work. So the Gemara says, Hanachrios Mikudoshos. But ultimately, again, the unrelated women, in other words, the other three, will be Mikudoshos. But the Gemara says, Va'amai. But why is that? Ha'at v'chamarhu hi. Is this not the equivalent of the case to you and the donkey? As well say, let's go back for just a moment. Now again, that's not a disparaging problem, right? The idea of the Gemara saying over here is the following. As well say, now what the Gemara is saying is like this. What did we get from the case of you and the donkey? Remember, this is the case where I give over to my property. I say, Reuven, I want you and the donkey to acquire my property. And both say, now remember, at least according to Rav Hamnuna says such a statement is meaningless. Why? Because it will say, the moment you go ahead and you essentially you bring in, what's Rav Hamnuna's logic? The moment you bring in an ineligible transactional partner, then essentially what that does is it voids the transaction. So once you're bringing a donkey into this, then the mice say, again, we're done. We're done here. So the Gemara suggests, I don't understand, when you're being Mekadesh a group of five women, and two of those women are sisters, which means that Kiddushin ultimately, again, can't occur with those two. So then the mice, again, why doesn't that void the entire thing? Yet that's not what the Gemara says. Here, what the Gemara says is the Kiddushin works with three out of the five, but obviously the sisters are out of the running. So why is that? So says the Gemara, Amar Leia Haimut Bechazoi, Rafuna Bar Avio Bechamlebo. So listen to this. This is actually quite amazing. So Amar Leia Haimut Bechazoi, Rafuna Bar Avio Bechamlebo. So I'll say, Rafuna Bar Avio dreamt about this particular Shaila. Right? He saw this Shaila, right? Actually, what it says is he saw the people involved in the Shaila Najim. I'll say, Halavai, we should be Zilcha. Right? Can you imagine if this is what you dream about? Incredible. And what happens? The most of Rav Avya Tiyufta. And Rav Avya answered up this kasha, Lav mi ukimna. Rabbi said, did we not go ahead and set up the case in the following way? Do'amar, haru'uya mikem labia tiskadeshli. And we'll say, ultimately, again, what Rav Avya saw in the dream was the following, meaning the interpretation of the case is the following, where the man doesn't just say, I am hereby Mekadesh this group with a basket of figs. Rather, what he says is, I am hereby Mekadesh all of those who are Reuyos Libya. In other words, I'm hereby Mekadesh all of you who have the ability, with whom I have the ability to consummate this relationship. Shabbos say, by definition, when he puts in there that clause, what is he doing? He's eliminating the sisters. So because he's eliminating the sisters from this, from the beginning, that's why ultimately, again, the Kiddushin will in fact work. Fine. Ha'udha amar la l'dvisu. Nechasi leich ulibneich. A man says to his wife, so we're switching gears now. So now I will say, just so you should know, the way we paskin in this case is the following. It would seem to be that I will say in a situation like this, we'd have to go l'chumra. In other words, because there's no resolution on how to deal with this case. Now, again, I will say the following. If a man goes ahead and says, person says, go and acquire like a chumr, so that we know the halacha is such a statement is meaningless. Such a statement is meaningless. Because ultimately, again, I'm linking the individual's ability to acquire to a donkey. Donkey doesn't have the ability, therefore individual can't. Therefore individual can't acquire as well. He'll say, so what happens if Lamaisa, I go ahead and I say to someone, I hereby grant you and the donkey my property. So it seems to be, we pass like Rav Nachman, who holds Kana Mechtsa. That ultimately, again, what we view is that essentially the grantor is giving me 50% of the property. I, the donkey, can't acquire. That's not the problem over here. We just view it as if he's conveying to me 50% of the property and he's throwing in the donkey just to convey the idea that he's not giving me everything. Okay. Sahuda Amrle Lidvisu. What's a man says to his wife? Nechasi Lech Ulebnech. This is actually very interesting. Reuven says to his wife, let's keep it easy. Yaakov says to his wife, right? I'm hereby conveying my property to you and to my son. I'm both saying, this is not Yerusha. He's conveying this as matana, as a gift. So he's saying, Yaakov is saying, right, Yaakov has a wife, Rachel. He says, Rachel, I'm giving my property to you and to your son, Yosef. So we'll say, what's the Shaila? Rav Yosef, I'm Rav Yosef, Kansa Mechza. So we'll say, the Shaila is the following. When Yaakov says to Rachel, I'm giving you my property, like to you and to your son, to you and to Yosef, what is Yaakov doing? Is Yaakov giving Rachel 50% of the estate? Or is he saying, actually this works better, if you can imagine for a moment that Rachel has three sons, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. So is Yaakov giving Rachel, Leah. Is Yaakov giving Leah 50% of the estate? Or is he telling her that what? You should acquire like one of the portions of the sons. So Rav Yosef understands that Yaakov is in fact conveying to Leah 50% of the estate. V'am Rav Yosef, mina amina la. Rav Yosef says, where do I know this from? The Sanya, Rabbi Omer, because Rabbi says, Vaisala Aaron Ulabanov. So I'll say, the Pasuk says, by the Lechem upon him, that it will be for Aaron and his sons. The Rabbi say, now what does Aaron get? Mechtzal Aaron u mechtzal Abanam. Now, the halacha is that whenever the Kohen Gadol is present, the Kohen Gadol has the right to claim up to half of the loaves of the Lechem Hapanim. And the remaining loaves, Rabbi say, go to who? Go to the Kohanim, the Mishmar, the particular Kohanim who are on call for that particular week. So what do you see from here? The point that Rav Yosef is making is that you see that whenever there is a conveyance, a default conveyance is 50%. So the fact is, V'haisa l'Aron l'banav, Aaron gets 50% of the loaves of the Lechem upon him. So too says Rav Yosef, when Yaakov says to Leah, I hereby am giving my estate to you and to your son, that unqualified conveyance of Yosef means that Yaakov is giving 50% to his wife Leah, and the remaining 50% is to be divided up amongst the sons. So the Gemara says the following, I'm going to buy it. Buy it. One second. Bishlam ha'hasam Aaron bar chalukahu, l'hachi parat be rachmana l'mishkal palga. We'll say it's different. Aaron, i.e. the Kohen Gadol, ultimately, again, as a bar palgu. Bar palgu, Bosa, means he has a sheiches to the lechem upon him. In other words, meaning, of course, he has a portion of the lechem upon him because the Kohen Gadol has a portion. Remember, the Kohen Gadol is unique in that the Kohen Gadol could serve in the Beis HaMikdash at his discretion. Whereas the other Kohanim are divided up into Batei Avos, into families, into Mishmoros, and you could only serve during your allotted time. The Kohen Gadol could serve whenever he wants. Because he can serve whenever he wants, he also has the ability to what? To take of whatever karbanos he wants whenever he decides to serve. So that makes sense, therefore, that he is granted a portion in the lechem upon him. Isha lav bas yerushahi. Rabbosai, a woman doesn't normally get a portion of Yerusha. Daya shetitol ke'echad mehabanim. Ultimately, again, she shouldn't get 50% of the estate. Rather, again, what? She should go ahead and she should get a portion alongside the sons. So she should not get 50% of the estate. Rather, we should just simply give her a portion as if she were one of the sons. Ini, is that so? V'ha uvda hava ben arda, v'agbi shmo palga. But yet there was, this episode came up in Arda, where a man gave his estate to his wife and his sons, And Shmuel awarded the wife 50% of the estate. So the Gemara says, This kind of case came up in Tveria, and Rabbi Yochanan awarded the wife 50%. So we'll say, so you see in these cases where a man conveys his property to his wife and to his kids, we view that conveyance as a conveyance of 50%. Vesu, furthermore, Kias Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef Amar. Furthermore, when Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef came along, he said the following, Huhud Deme Kalila, Deshadu Deme Malka, Abule. Va'a, there was this episode where the king wanted a new crown. So what does the king do when he wants a new crown? He taxes. Who did he tax in this particular situation? So also, if you look at the Rashbam, it's four lines up on the bottom. Be'keser, hitilu ali lasosa, abule va'asterige, ashirim v'sarim, upon the rich men and upon the officers. So the king levied this particular crown tax on the rich men and on the officers. Now what happens? So the Gemara says, Amr find the Shadube Malka Abule Vastaruge, Amr Rebbe, Nisvu Abule, Amr Rebbe, Nisvu Abule Palga, Vistaruge Palga. Ultimately, again, we said the rich men have to give half, and the officers gave half. So we'll say, so what do you see from here? You see from here that Lamais, again, even though the rich men were richer than the officers, nevertheless, when there is, in this case, it's not a conveyance, in this case, there's a tax, we assume that everyone shares equally in this. The idea being that when there is a financial transaction where particular percentages are not clearly delineated, we assume it's a 50-50 split. In this case, it's a 50-50 split in expenses, but obviously you understand we're applying this in the case of the wife as well. Therefore, when a husband gives over his property to the wife and the sons, and the husband does not delineate any kind of percentages, we assume it's a 50-50 split. Again, 50-50 between the wife and the sons. So if there are multiple sons, those sons will share in that 50%, but the idea is that the wife is getting 50%, to which the Gemara says, no, that case is different. Ha'achi ashta asam, meikara, kavikasvi, abuli havakasi. So I'll say, under normal circumstances, when the king would tax the rich men, the tax was written against the rich, but it was understood that the officers would help out with that as well. The king knew that the officers always helped the rich guys go ahead and pay the tax. Therefore, again, normally taxes were written against the rich and not against the officers, but the officers always helped out the rich guys. Therefore, in this case, when the king needs to collect even more money for the crown tax, he specifically writes the tax against not just the rich guys, but the officers as well. Therefore, Abosai, it's understood from the king's edict that he means for each of these groups to pay half. Masiv Rabbi Zera, Ha'omer Hare Alai Mincha Me'a Yisaron, Lahavi Bishnei Kelim. Well, listen to this. A man says, I hereby take upon myself to bring a Karban Mincha of 100 Yisaron. 100 Yisaron. And I both say now, we're going to see that the maximum Mincha is going to be 60 Yisaron. 60, that's the maximum Mincha you could bring. So a man goes out and pledges 100 Yisaron for a Mincha, that has to be brought in two different utensils. What's going to be the shayla? The shayla is, how do we divvy up the isronos? So what's the halacha? Maybe shishim mekliyachad, varba mekliyachad. So he brings 60 isaron for the mincha in one kli, and 60 isaron for the mincha in a second kli. So what happens? V'im amadeis. So say if you went ahead and you brought 50 isarn in one utensil and another 50 isarn in another utensil, so you're yotzei. So the Gemara says im hevi im lechatchila lo. Rabbi say, what do you see from here? You see from here that's what? That if you brought 50-50, 50 in one, 50 in the second utensil, you're yotzei. But lechatchila, that's not how he wants you to bring it. How he wants you to bring it? 60 in one and 40 in the other. So we'll say, so the shayla is, v'isak v'daitcha kol hani ki agavna palgu palguhu. So we'll say, if we assume that under normal circumstances, what's driving this? What's driving this is the following. That we're trying to espouse a principle that whenever you have to divide something, and there is no clear mandate, there is no clear instruction as to how to divide, the default always is 50-50. So if a man, and again, what's driving all this? So a man says to his wife, I hereby convey my property to you and my sons. Again, not telling us how that property is supposed to be divided. We assume that what does the husband mean? 50% for the wife, 50% for the husband. Now what the Gemara is suggesting is, if that principle is true, we should be able to apply it to all kinds of cases. So a man says, I'm going to bring a 100 isaron mincha. Rabosai, the most you could bring in any particular utensil for a mincha is 60 isaron. So what does the Braisa tell me? Put 60 in one and 40 in another. I don't understand. If it's true that any time something has to be divided and there's no clear delineation for the division, you automatically go back to a default of 50-50, then what? Put 50 esronos in one utensil, 50 esronos in a second utensil, and shalom Yisrael. Why is the division 60-40? To which the Gemara Tzvisa Daital Kol Ki Agavna Palgo Palgo Afil Lechatchila Nami. Now the Braisa says if you ended up dividing it up 50-50, B'di'evid your yotzei, but lechatchila you actually do a 60-40. What's the pshat? To which the Gemara says, no. I'll tell you why. Hachi hashta hasam. So in this case, also over here by the mincha, anan sahadi dahi gavra meikar the carbon gadol kamechavim. So we'll say it's clear when a man says that I want to bring 100 esronos for a carbon mincha. What's his kavana? His kavana is I don't just want to bring a carbon. I want to bring a big carbon. So why does he say in two utensils? Because suppose a person knows that he cannot bring 100 esronos in one kli. So we'll say, what's his default? What do we understand his intention to be? Therefore, again, therefore, because his kavana is to go ahead and bring a large carbon, so we assume that what he wants to do is the following. Put the maximum number of esronos in one utensil and then leave the remainder for the second utensil. What's the maximum number of esronos you could put in one utensil, Rabosai? 60 esronos. Therefore, we assume we put 60 esronos in one utensil, 40 esronos in the second utensil. Fine. Therefore, Rabosai, the Gemara says, V'hilchasa. And what is the halacha V'hilchasa? Kavasi Rav Yosef. The halacha of Rav Yosef will say in three areas. Number one, Besada. I will say we actually learned this before. What's the case? So if you look at the Rashbam, Besada, the Perak Ashutven Gabe Ahu Gavra, the Zabin Ara and Mitzra de Beinasha, Utlas Mili Kamar of Yosef. Let's listen to this. Halacha number one is that if Reuven goes ahead and purchases property, and then what? He owns a field. Father dies, son is dividing up the estate. One of the estate properties happens to border on the field that Reuven had already bought. Reuven could compel the other brothers to give him that field that is closest to the field he already bought. That's halacha number one. Number two, we'll say is inyon. What's inyon? Look at the Rashbam. Inyon. Listen to this. The halacha is, remember, we spoke about this, that for every time you enter into a transaction, even after the transaction is done, so the halacha is, there is a window in which you can still back out of the transaction. What's the window, Rabbi Osai? As long as the parties are still discussing the transaction is not closed. As long as they are sukin ba'oso inyon, the transaction is open and you could still pull out. And lastly, mechza. Now, I'll say mechza is this particular topic that whenever someone conveys something over to someone else and there are no clearly delineated proportions of conveyance or proportions of division, the default is half, 50%. Therefore, we'll say in this case over here, where a man conveys property over, he says, my wife giving you and my sons my property, we understand that statement to mean 50% to the wife and 50% to the sons. There was a man who sent pieces of silk back to his home. So we'll say, the shayla is, who are the intended recipients ultimately again for this silk? The Rashbam says, Piske Dishiroi, Chatichos Mi'il, Ustam Shalach Lechalik Libnei Beso. So he's sending back this silk to his house, and he wants to go ahead and divide it up amongst, he wants it given to the members of his household. The Shaila is, who gets what? Am Rabbi Ami, Haroi Libanim Libanim, Roi Libanos Libanos. Rabbi Ami says, look, all we do is, we'll say, the assumption over here is that these pieces of silk are articles of clothing. So the articles of clothing that are for men go to the sons. The articles of clothing that are for daughters go to the daughters. Fine. For lo amran, this is actually very interesting. Elo de lesle kalsa. This is only true if the father doesn't have a daughter-in-law. Ava isle kalsa. But if he has a daughter-in-law, le kalsi shadar. We assume then that the articles of clothing for women go to the daughter-in-law, not to the daughters. We'll see actually quite a dramatic gemara. Take a look at the Rashbam. Lekal se shadar, velo lip nosav, vidafka de insiba ban se. So we'll see actually, let's qualify this for just a moment. Vishat, so the gemara says, vi iban se lo nesivan. However, if the daughters are not married, lo shavak panse, o meshadar lekal se, then a man will not forget about his daughter and give to his daughter-in-law. So we'll see, it's actually quite amazing. So the gemara suggests the following. If lemaisa, again, the father sends home something for women, so if there are unmarried daughters, the silk will go for the unmarried daughters. If the daughters are married, however, and let's say the son is married as well, so if there are married daughters and a daughter-in-law, we assume that the man goes ahead and prefers to give that to his daughter-in-law than to his daughters, which we'll say is quite dramatic. Again, it could be for a variety of different reasons. It could be, number one, because lemaisa, again, the daughters are going to like their father regardless, but the father wants to gain favor with the daughter-in-law. That's possibility one. Possibility two, says, also we know that it was common. The Marashah points this out. It was common for sons to live with parents after getting married. Therefore, again, the daughter-in-law was often living in the home of her father-in-law versus the married daughters who went to live with their husbands by the husband's family. So it would have been the daughter-in-law, ultimately, again, it would have been in the home of the father, not the daughters. Fine. So the Gemara goes weiter. Hahuda amar luhu, nechasei lebonai. I will say, this is actually a very interesting case. A man says, we'll call him Yaakov says, my property should go to my sons, plural. Vahavilei b'na ubarto. I will say, here's the only problem. Yaakov, the father, didn't have sons. He had a son and a daughter. So the shayla is, how do we understand his statement that my property should go to my sons? Mi karu inshi libra banai. So we'll say, is it common for a person to call a son sons? In other words, meaning, is that just a normative colloquialism that a person will say, even though I only have one son, I'll say sons. And what the man is trying to do say is, meaning he's saying the daughter does not have a portion here. Oh, Dilma, look, the Isser Kasi also happens to deal with a different discussion about a daughter getting one-tenth of an estate ultimately to pay for her dowry, which we're just not going to get into now. Oh, Dilma, lo kari in shi libra banai. So we'll say, or maybe a son, a father does not normally call one son sons, plural. Ulamoshcha lebarta b'matana ka'asi. And I will say what he actually means to do is the following. What he actually means to do is that sons in this context will include what? Will include my children, and he's coming to include his daughter in this gift as well. So what's this? Here the shayla. A man says, I'm hereby giving my property to my sons. But he has one son and one daughter. So how do we understand that statement? Do we say that people call a son sons, in which case he's conveying his property to his sons? Or perhaps what the Gemara is saying over here is that sons means what? Means what? Sons really means children. My children. And therefore he's including his daughter in this gift as well. That's the fundamental shayla. So says the Gemara, so Amar Abayi Tashma, Ubnei Dan Chushim. So I say the pasuk says, the sons of Dan, Chushim. Dan has one son. and yet the Torah calls him Chushim. So what do you see from here? You see from here that it's not, at least on a biblical level, to go ahead and refer to even one child in the plural as sons. Amalei Rava, Rava says, no, that case is different. Dilma, ke detarna debei Chizkiyah. Maybe that case is different, like as detarna detarna debei Chizkiyah. Sheyem merubim ke Chushim shalkana. That they both say Chushim's offspring, or Dun's offspring, I should say Chushim's offspring, were literally as numerous, Chushim means clusters, shalkana, of reeds. So maybe, even though Chushim was one person, it refers to him as B'nei Dan, because Chushim's offspring were so numerous. Ela Amar Rava, rather Rava says, U'B'nei Palu, Eliav, the sons of Palu were Eliav, Rav Yosef Amar, U'B'nei Eson, Azariah, the sons of Eson were Azariah. So let's say, what do you see from here? You see from here on more than one occasion that it was normal to call a son sons. It was normal to refer to even one child in the plural. Therefore, you see from here that when a father goes ahead and conveys property to his sons, even though he only has one son and a daughter, he means to convey that property ultimately to his son and not to his daughter. Hahu damar luhu nechasai libnai. Well, so listen to this. A man who says, hereby want to give my property to my sons, but he doesn't have sons. Instead, what does he have? Havu le bra ubar bra. He has one son and one grandson. So the Shaila Rabosai is, Karu inshi lebar bra bra. Olo, do people call their grandchildren their children or not? Rabosai, that's the Shaila. If I convey something to my sons, but I only have one son and a grandson, do I mean to say, do we just call, a person calls his son, sons, plural? Or do we say, no, sons in this context must include what? My son and my grandson. So the Gemara says, Rav Chaviva Amar, Karu Inish Libar Bra Bra. So Rav Chaviva said, people call their grandchildren children. Mar Bravashi Amar, Lo Karu Inish Libar Bra Bra. Ravashi says, no, people do not call their children, their grandchildren children. Tanya Kavase Demar Baravashi. So we'll say, ultimately again, we have a price that supports Mar Baravashi, that people do not call their grandchildren children. Because what does the Braisa say? Hamuter Hana'ami Banim. We'll say, if somebody goes ahead and makes a neder not to get Hana'a from their children, Mutter Bibnei Banim, they're ultimately permitted to get Hana from who? From their grandchildren. So we'll say, so you see from here that what? That grandchildren are not reckoned like children. And therefore, Aloch Lamaisa, if a man goes in and says, Nechasai Lebanai, hereby leave my estate to my children, to my sons, right? And he only has one son, but he also has a grandson, we view that estate as being left to the son and not to the grandson. All right, so we'll stop over here. Well, the Miratz Hashem pick up at the Mishnah. B'sha'a tovu u'metzlachos tomorrow. So right, so it seems to be like from a familial perspective, like a lot, like an ancestral, a dar perspective, generational. Yeah, b'nei banim hare and kibanim. Money? No. When I'm leaving my estate to someone, you assume it's just my sons.
One son. Yeah, but it is a